Hey everyone, welcome to the Slice of Healthcare podcast. This episode is presented by The Garage. Really excited to dig deep with two folks that are doing this the cool way. They're in the office today in person. My favorite types of episodes, and let's just dive in. I know we have a bunch we want to all cover here today, everyone. So for starters, let's really dig into, John and Pranam, it would be great to just give us that quick kind of snippet of your background, and then we'll dig deeper.
Sure. Go ahead, John.
Sure. Thank you, Pranam, and thank you, Jared. Pleasure to be here. John Dionisio, CIO, Somos Community Care. And I originally started at the health plan. That's where kind of I grew up in healthcare. And after spending some time there, I switched over on the provider side. And it's been a great ride since, right? We're focused on value-based care. We're focusing on social care. And we're focusing on, you know, how to really impact the providers. And kind of as the next step to that is how do providers impact members, which is something I'm really passionate about. A lot of folks that, you know, I work with, right, that's kind of first for them is how do we engage the patients? How do we make their lives better?
Awesome. John, it's great to have you in Orlando, in our offices here in downtown Orlando. I'm Pranam Ben, founder and CEO of the company. Been in healthcare for 2 decades now, most of it spent on technology and data, enabling solutions that allowed for change, positive change in healthcare. As a company, we are a platform company that allows for population health management that empowers value-based care across all care settings. Today, we operate at scale with more than 15 million patients managed on the platform across 34 states, and very excited to be partnered with organizations like Somos, where the entire approach to care is patient first.
And I know one of the things that you and I wanted to chat about here today is kind of doing a flashback and then looking forward towards the future. But, you know, it's been 4 years since the start of the pandemic, which is wild to think about, first off. I remember I was living in Boston, now I'm living in the Tampa area. So much has changed since then. It was a scary time for both patients, but also, really the chronically ill patient population. So would love to get both of your point of views on here. You know, how was your experience during the pandemic looking back at it now?
Well, I'll start. Just first and foremost, before we get into any healthcare, it's kind of interesting walking down Broadway and seeing it empty. At one point, some of the stores were being boarded up. So it was just a very, very different view of what New York City really, what I was used to seeing in New York City. The pandemic, obviously, I remember setting up a lot of sites, right? A lot of folks kind of just shut down, but Somos was up and running. We were setting up testing sites at the very beginning. We were setting up vaccination sites toward the end. And kind of an interesting little story here. Like, before anyone knew anything about anything regarding COVID, there was instructions not to wear a mask within, like, specific zones. Like, obviously, if you were patient facing, that you would have the mask on. But then when you would come back to, like, home base to debrief and do that things, I remember just having someone say, hey, masks off, please. Let's keep the PPE outside. So I thought that was interesting. Obviously, that was not the right thing to do, but we didn't know too much at the very beginning. And I want to say this was probably February of 2020, mm-hmm. right? So I could be confusing myself on the dates there, but that was just something interesting to point out. Then you look around the room and you see, state police, you see, reserves, you see parts of military, you see Somos, you see physician, independent physicians, you see city, Department of Health, employees, you see state Department of Health employees, you see, there was a forest ranger who was kind of helping us figure out what to do. So it's just really all hands on deck in terms of how do we start to contain or at least serve the people, right? We may not have been able to contain it there, but how do we best serve the people and get this? And by the way, Jared, I love your name here, Slice of Healthcare. And what I was going to say is, how do we get everyone's, even if it's a forest ranger, how do we get their slice, their version of things, to be able to say, here's how you can best, you know, whether it's logistics, whether it's coordination, whether it's helping the patient or direct patient care, It was that slice, like everyone contributed their own slice to be able to tackle this big thing. And then one of the things I also like to mention is during the pandemic, I was my title wasn't CIO, my title was refrigerator technician, right? Because we set up these, what are they called, ultra cold freezers in Yankee Stadium. And you know, the vaccines, whether it was Moderna or the other ones that we were administering, it required these really cold, ultra cold freezers, right, to be able to store it and have an inventory. So I wasn't a CIO there. I was logistics and I was refrigerator technician. And just looking back, like kind of like smirking, not necessarily laughing, but smirking again about some of the day-to-day stuff we faced. Lucky to have kind of gotten through that and experienced it and understanding different perspectives in healthcare.
So from my perspective, Jared, I look at it from three different dimensions, right? One is personally, right? You know, when the pandemic came about us, we had just finished a user event. We were 2 weeks over, 2 weeks past the event, and it felt like the entire country shut down overnight. That instilled a sense of fear initially. You know, I was scared for myself, for my daughter, for my family, and everybody else. And then slowly you kind of, there's this sense of hope, sense of revival, sense of belief that eventually, if you look at history as well, eventually humanity prevails, right? So you hold on to that hope and you see that in the inspirational work that frontline workers did across communities. And it's kind of like personally, it's been a journey of hope and survival and whatnot. And then if I think about it from the garage's perspective, we were absolutely humbled during that phase. You know, we, all of our customers and partners made us mission critical because you would assume that priorities changed and everything pivoted at the, during that time. But we were still relevant to every one of our customers and partners, including Somos. And in fact, I had the opportunity to join John at the Yankee Stadium and see everything that he shared with you firsthand, and it was one of the most inspirational experiences I've had, you know, where title didn't matter, role didn't matter, you, who you are as a person didn't matter. We were all there helping everyone that needed, you know, an interaction, that needed a vaccination. And even Somos's founder, Dr. Raman Talaj, was on the streets. I've seen him go out there and do whatever is needed to the community, you know. So absolutely brilliant. And you, when you have that experience, you come back more inspired to work harder to support the frontline workers and provider organizations like Somos. So for us, it was a very, very humbling two-year journey through the pandemic. And then I think about all of us as a community, right? You know, if you think about the official deaths, there were 6 million reported deaths from COVID across the world. And indirect reported unofficial count is about 18 million. These are people that didn't die because of COVID, but died because of other reasons that where COVID had an impact. And then there was a $14 trillion economic impact because of COVID, right? So if I think about us as an entire community, right, we survived it with a lot of pain, with a lot of suffering. And are we ready as a community to face whatever be the next pandemic? That's where I kind of like, in the, especially in the last 2 years post-pandemic, you know, there's a lot of thought around it and say, okay, are we better off now? So if COVID happened tomorrow, if there's a new flavor of COVID at that level of an outbreak that happens tomorrow, will our response as a system be any better? I think that's a question that I think requires more dialogue, requires more reflection and more preparedness, you know?
Well, Pranam, you hit upon something that I wanted to kind of ask as a follow-up too, which is great. It's really around, you know, how do you feel that COVID changed the way the industry views population health, right? And there's parts of it that you already answered in there, but I want to give you both a chance to kind of tack on to that if you'd like.
So there's two things, and I'd love to hear from John as well. I think one of the things that we realized is that, you know, we got to make community health a much higher priority than what it was or what it still is, right? Healthcare was designed to react to a patient's, you know, treatment, not to react to or proactively monitor a community's health, right? So global health needs to be a much bigger priority. That was the biggest takeaway. And I think we have made progress, but there's still a lot of work to do. And I read this this quote from an epidemiologist. His name was Larry. I'm not remembering his last name, Jared. This was, I read this 2 years ago. He said, you cannot prevent an outbreak, but you can prevent a pandemic. So basically, his point was that an outbreak will happen because, you know, we've seen that through the years, history, through the times in history, we've had many outbreaks. How you respond to it defines whether the outbreak becomes a pandemic or not. Right? Do you have the infrastructure? Do you have systems that are ready? Do you have information available when needed? Do you have the tools to respond to a to an outbreak? Right? That those key questions that we as a health system, we as a community need to check off our list. Are we ready? So you can prevent a future pandemic, even though you may not be able to prevent a future outbreak, right? And in all of that, you know, information, data, and when you're thinking about a community-first approach to preventing the next pandemic, a population health management strategy is at the core of it.
Yeah, and I think in an effort to make things more simple, they got ridiculously complicated.
Yeah.
Right, and it's like it's kind of easy to say that, but then when you really sit down and think about it, and I'm gonna talk about this from my perspective. Serving Medicaid patients in the Bronx, or excuse me, all over New York City, actually. You know, you've got South Bronx with, I don't know, maybe about 30,000 Medicaid patients that are with SOMOS. It's probably a lot more than that. I don't want to quote the wrong number, but certainly in the hundreds of thousands within a couple of zip codes. But you're talking about six-story, 12-story buildings, and there's hundreds and thousands of Medicaid lives in there. And you know, there's many, many of them packed into one apartment, right? Large families, et cetera. And how do you reach them, right? How do you really engage with the patient and say, hey, this is what we really need you to do, right? Basic conversations. But then at the same time, then, you know, you kind of have to figure out how to scale that. Like one room may have a family of six, but then you start taking a look at one apartment building. It's, you know, all of a sudden it's 1,000. How does that same effort, right, that you're using for a small population be able to tackle someone, you know, a larger group? And it's all within the same zip code, right? I don't know what the density is in Florida. I was a Florida resident, but been in New York for quite some time now. But, you know, I'm not trying to minimize Florida's density, but like it's the same question, but just posed a little bit differently. How do you start to target more people? You know, it's more spread out now at this point, right?
Right.
The density may be a little bit lower,
more distributed,
but it's more distributed. You got to figure out how to be able to reach these folks. So, population health, like, and how some of the pandemic lessons learned, try to impact that is, you know, honestly, there's no one answer. And the answer that I'd love to give you is I really don't know, right? Are we prepared, Pranav? I mean, seriously, are we prepared for the next pandemic? I don't think we are. I think we can say we've learned some lessons. But then when it comes down to really implementing some of these lessons learned, I think we're far from being able to do that.
Yeah, I don't think we're at a point where we have systems that will prevent the next pandemic. John, I think we have systems that will probably respond better, but that's not saying much, right? I mean, if you say that, hey,
yeah,
I can, you know what I'm saying? I can reduce the hotspotting. I ensure that, you know, our ability to have PPEs or, you know, the turnaround times on vaccination, you know, innovations or whatever be the case, but that's still not prevention, you know what I'm saying? So I don't think we're at a point where we can confidently say that we've learned enough from the pandemic that we'll prevent the next one, but I think we've learned enough to respond better to the next one.
Yeah, and I think even like thinking about inventory management, and I don't know where these ultra cold freezers are today, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who's using them.
Yeah.
But how do we have that stuff readily available? I'm not saying stockpile, but how do we have those equipment readily available?
Right.
When things happen. And then one more thing I wanted to mention, Pranav, in terms of like population health, it's especially during the pandemic, it's like their needs didn't really end. right? Their healthcare needs didn't really end. Their priorities were different.
Yeah.
But the patients still needed their care gaps closed. Yeah. They still needed their annual well visits, right? Infants that were born around that time still needed their vaccinations. Yeah. So then how do you, saying we're prepared for a pandemic, but how do you start to overlay like the daily needs that's still there? So a lot of very complex questions, Jared, and I'll be the first to admit, it's a lot, and I don't know if we're really prepared for the next one, to be honest.
Yeah, I'll just quickly add that I feel like we took away the shock factor, right? If it happened again, it was that initial, there was so much time spent on being shocked, like, how could this happen, right? And then to your point, we had these refrigerators, we started fast tracking vaccinations. Hopefully we took away that shock factor if something were to happen again. But to your point, we're still not prevented. We're not probably near where we need to be yet.
But that's a good point too. So lessons learned, right? Like, you know, regardless of politics, warp speed happened, and it was able to deliver what was needed in record time. Our own experiences, right? I was talking to Pranam and I said, Pranam, I need the ability to be able to text message patients, you know, tens of thousands at a time. And I don't have the capabilities to be able to do that today. And then Pranam's like, I'll get back to you. And I think one of the stories there, I could be mixing up my products here, but you know, your developer at the time was shopping or something.
Yeah.
And you called him.
Yeah, he was at a grocery store shopping for his kids. I called him and then he huddled a team. And in 6 days, we built this secure texting tool for Somos to use and deploy and scale it to reach out to thousands of patients. That again was inspired by Somos' work. It's not so much that, you know, we had that, you know, we knew what was at stake and we wanted to kind of like step up for Somos. And, you know, kudos to my team. They had that commitment. They had the DNA to understand why that was important and commit to what was needed, you know?
And it wasn't, those products existed. And again, I'm not trying to minimize anything here. Those products existed, but like the way our partnership with the garage, like one, right, all of this stuff needs BAAs and HIPAA, and we have to check the boxes to make sure things were being able to be deployed compliantly. But I think because of the existing relationships we had with garage, that we were able to launch that in record time. And it saved time, energy, logistics, like countless different things where we were able to, at the end of the day, I want to say we deployed or we administered 400 to 600,000 vaccines at the time. Again, I'll have to double check those numbers, but hundreds of thousands of vaccines. And a lot of that was because of being able to coordinate with the same number of patients through tools that we were able to get and use with the help of Garage.
And the entire community that Somos served at back then, and we saw this across the country, John, it was not just New York, right? But if you think about how stressful that period was for patients, not knowing when they would be vaccinated, not knowing the outcome of the vaccination and things like that, right? So, you know, for us, we saw the things that we saw, which is savings in time, logistics and whatnot, but there was this undercurrent of, you know, the impact that the work had on the mental health or the mental fabric of the society. And we were just thankful that we were able to pull that off, you know. I feel like it would have gotten a lot more complicated if that solution had not played out the way it did. And thanks to Somos for guiding us along the way.
And one more thing to add, Jared, you know, you're kind of in the midst of chaos every day. But I don't know if you remember this, being at Yankee Stadium, you're able to see the field and it was untouched and there was about 2 feet of snow on the ground.
Yeah.
To be able to kind of sit down and take a look at that and say, wow, this is incredible. Yeah. In the midst of chaos, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of a cool, like slice again, going back to your theme here, cool thing to see during the midst of all the chaos.
Now, you guys have already kind of mentioned parts of it, but how did both your organizations really come together during the pandemic? And, you know, I guess, what effect did it have and what effect did you hope it would have at that time?
think that we didn't think of at that point. I'll speak from my perspective, Jared. At that point, from my perspective, was I didn't think of any boundaries or any lines of communication. Pretty much everything was on the line. We were all hands on. We were all in. And I flew to New York to be with Somos when the Yankee Stadium events were unfolding. So there was no lines of demarcation. Like, everybody was on call. Everybody was made this the highest priority. And we came at it saying, regardless of who the customer is, if we can pivot and do things that will help them save lives, that's our mission. We didn't care what our mission was the previous day. That day, that was the mission. That was the responsibility of the entire company. That's how we came at it. And John and anybody else had direct lines of communication with anyone in the company, complete clarity on where we were in terms of our tools, our solutions. Communications lines were transparent, and you know, we allowed for that kind of visibility, that kind of open partnership to happen. And I think one of the silver linings of that whole experience was that spirit of that kind of unfiltered partnership continues even to this day. So I think that's a silver lining that we carried forward. Obviously, we put in some project management controls and things like that, but that spirit was carried forward.
Yeah, I think what you said, the last part there, I think we tried, right? We tried to have some sort of organization, but with every new thing, right, whether it came from the state, whether it came from the news, whether it came from requirements anywhere, each new thing kind of just, it was a curveball.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And we reduced the call center volume. That was a big thing, right? Like, if you're calling call center for your COVID results, think about how anxious you are as a consumer, as a person, as a patient. In us being able to securely deliver COVID results to your personal devices, I think that helped a little bit. I mean, that helped quite a bit. And Somos saw a drop in their call center volumes and things like that. So overall, that was a very, very gratifying, positive experience.
And I guess really when we look ahead, right, what's in store for, we'll start off with Somos, and then we'll kick it back to you, Pranam, with the garage. But what's kind of next for both of you?
Well, so that's a great, good timing on that question, because what's next for us in New York is the governor just signed, a couple of months old, right? I think they signed in late February. But the 1115 waiver to be able to address social care needs of the patient. So a lot of the things that we're focusing and preparing for now is how do we start to really understand how the workflows work for social care. We've had strong partnerships with CBOs, right, community-based organizations that provided these types of services. And when I say social care, just a little bit of background, the social care waiver, 1115 waiver, is focusing on transportation. I should know this by heart. Transportation,
housing,
food, nutrition,
food insecurity.
Food insecurity, and overall care management, right? So, just kind of taking myself back to when I was an analyst at a health plan, and I'm looking at all this data, and I say, hey, why is this patient, going to the ER 100 times? And this is real data. I've seen it 100 times over the course of the last 6 months. And, you find out that a lot of the issues were, that's one example, but a lot of the issues when you look at, the frequent flyers for ERs or mental health, substance use, homelessness, right? And some nutrition issues. So then, fast forward to probably over a decade later, we're having initiatives now that are able to address these types of social care. So next for Somos is to be able to start to partner with the CBOs. We've done it in the past, a different scale. We're trying to scale this up to all of New York City and other of our other organizations in upstate. But we're going to try to figure out how to scale social care so that it impacts their medical care.
And from our perspective, Jared, we are clear about our mission, which is to change healthcare for good, right? I mean, that's like the utopian, mission that we are committed to. But within that, if I think about what's our approach to it, right? And in the 12 years that we've been doing this, I feel there's this natural progression to what the industry coins as a quintuple aim, which is how can we enable better care at lower cost in a way that improves outcomes of community health, in a way that's sustainable, and in a way that allows for affordable and accessible care for all. You know, so if I think about those five dimensions, which forms the five pillars of the quintuple aim, how can we be the platform that has the architecture to empower that collective North Star of the entire industry, right? How can we come at it with an architecture that is data first, digital first, platform based, and human centric, right? That human centric is the most important component. If you really ask me, the other are in a way how you design and how you kind of commoditize a solution, right? But if you really think about it, the heart of the entire architecture that allows for us to progress towards that quintuple aim is that human-centric component, because regardless of how much technology we build, healthcare was, is, and will always remain a human experience.
And last part for both of you, quick hitters, right? Just in a word, it could be a sentence, because you've already kind of hit on this a little bit, but I want to just as a good wrap up, if another pandemic, hopefully not, but if another pandemic were to happen in the future, what would you do differently? What, if you only had to pick one thing?
I'd get my HVAC license. No, that's a joke. no, I think it's communication. If you were to put in one word, it's systems. For now, I think it's systems. I don't know if you feel differently, but and with that one word of systems is, you know, coordination with folks that are providing, you know, solutions, right? Vaccinations, et cetera. Folks that are administering these vaccines. Policies, who can and who cannot administer vaccines. Location, timing, like all those are, you can kind of boil that up to systems and say, we have to have systems that can do this.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would agree with John. I would say systems of collaboration, systems of communication. I think that's what we saw gravely missing. And, you know, I think if we can keep the communication and information ahead of the patient or the person that needs the care, it'll be better, because you're then not reacting to something you don't know, right? You are reacting to something that you know, right? So this creates a better reception, a better reaction. So absolutely, I agree with John that I think we better systems is what we need for the next pandemic.
And that's a good point you said. It's like the patients, I think at some point the patients know what to do now.
Correct.
And, you know, again, regardless of history or whatever, you know, their experiences are, right? If that pandemic happens, I think the patients or people, you and me,
right?
You and me and mm-hmm. your family and et cetera,
better
everyone else in this room, like I think we've got a better know-how in what to be able to do and to expect. I mean, you know, that might be a little bit of a rosy perspective, but I think at least there's some experience there that can help us, you know, which way to go.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining me here today and for sharing some thoughts. And, you know, I think we're all in agreement. Hopefully we don't experience another pandemic, but if we do, we'll be a little bit more prepared for it, but still, until these systems are in place, maybe not as prepared as we all hope we would be. But thank you both so much for joining me here today. This was a fun conversation, and excited for future conversations.
Jared, thank you. Thank you for hosting us, and we enjoyed talking to you.
Likewise. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Pranav.
Thank you, John.